need the look at you in the city of Cape Town. Mazamane Musus Dai. Right, can I ask somebody to please get the door at the back? And then ask all of us to come to order. Colleagues, we welcome you to this joint meeting of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts and the PC of Public Enterprises. We are meeting this morning to get a briefing on the state of affairs at SAA so that we are kept up to speed as the Public Accounts Committee and the PC, which is obviously responsible for the affairs and policy outlook of the entity as it reports to that committee. So I would, I see a hand.
Thank you, and my apologies for interrupting, but I notice our presentation is marked secret. Now clearly this is an open meeting, and I'm sure that is a typing error.
Can I request that when we the department and the entity start, they will explain that. Can we raise that then? I would request that apologies be sent through to the respective committee secretaries from our side of the committees, and we will get, if there are apologies from this side of the house, into the record for the purposes of progress. The minister will have to leave at 10:30, 10:45 for a cabinet committee meeting. So hence the urgency for us to start. So colleagues, what we will do, we're going to dive straight into the presentation. We are going to hand over to the department and the entity. So, Minister, we will request that you introduce, so the your delegation introduces themselves, and then we take it from there. Yeah, all right. Chair, is there anything on your side? All right. Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chairpersons, and members of the committee, and members of the media and public that are present. Forgive me for my voice, I've got laryngitis, so it might crack up every now and again. But otherwise, I'm fighting fit, just for the record. We were requested by the Standing Committee to provide you with the status of what's happening at SAA. So what we have is a presentation which will give you some background to how it ended up in business rescue on the 6th of December 2019, firstly. Secondly, we will explain what are the implications of being in business rescue as an entity or a company, and take you through the relevant sections of the Companies Act. Thirdly, I think the committee should also note that this is probably the first, and so as far as we know, the first public entity to be placed in business rescue. Excuse me. So there are lots of lessons to be learned, both by the business rescue practitioners and by the government as well, as we go through this process. And the cross-matching, if you like, of the Companies Act on the one hand and the PFMA on the other hand. And then finally, we will address any issues that you might have. The committee also requested that a team from the business rescue practitioners join us, or that you wanted to see them. Their status at the moment, Chair, as I have tried to explain to the chairpersons, is that they are in the process of developing, as you will see just now, in terms of the law, a business rescue plan. And once the business rescue plan is available, they will, and secondly, when it is approved by the creditors and stakeholders, that plan will be public, as will be any information related to that plan. So at this stage, regrettably, the business rescue practitioners aren't able to answer any specific questions about the nature of the plan or the nature of the investigations. And I'd ask respectfully for members of the committee to recognize that fact and limitation in our conversation this morning. So you have the list of people that are present, both from the department and from the business rescue practice practitioners team. So you don't, do you want everybody to introduce themselves? Or
Yes, I think so. Just for the purposes of the record, one by one. The team in front, colleagues, is the department, and the business rescue practitioner team is at the back. All right, over to you. We'll start in the front, and then we will come to the business rescue practitioner team.
Good morning, Chairpersons and honorable members of the committee. My name is Melanchthon Makobe. I'm the acting DDG for legal and governance.
Good morning. I'm Khatatso Tlhakudi. I'm the acting director general.
Good morning, Chairpersons and members of the committees. I am Noni Mashika, and I am the acting chief director for aviation.
Good morning. My name is Bongani Nkasana. I'm in the business rescue practitioners team.
Good morning, Chairpersons and the members. My name is Siviwe Dongwana. I'm a joint business rescue practitioner for SAA.
Good morning. My name is Ntlani Magena. I'm from ENS Africa, part of the business rescue team.
All right. Minister, we'll hand over to you for the presentation. I would imagine the narrative of secrets falls away because the presentation is now on the screen. So I think
I know it's secret only for yourselves. So forgive us for that error. It's a typo. And there's one member of the business rescue practitioners team, Mr. Matheson, who's making his way in.
All right.
Thank you. Mr. Makobe will take you through the presentation quickly.
All right. Colleagues, are we all fine? Are we good to go? All right.
Thank you, Minister. SAA has been facing a plethora of challenges, both operational and financial challenges, and there were interventions that were made to address those challenges that SAA was going through. Unfortunately, some of those interventions have not yielded the results over time. Escape capture and corruption has also plagued SAA, as it has been evident from the Zondo Commission, the CPIC hearings, and the Pretoria High Court application. The performance of SAA has deteriorated over time, leading to business rescue. I will explain why business rescue was chosen over liquidation. This just shows the losses that SAA has been making over years. As you can see from the graph, it has been a downward spiral in terms of the losses. In terms of the revenue, in the year 2007 and 8, there was an upward movement, but effectively the revenue has been going down over years. There were different options that were considered for SAA. One was to leave the airline as it is. That was not an option. Business rescue process, place SAA on a voluntary or involuntary liquidation, and radical restructuring of the airline. A decision was taken to place SAA under business rescue. And the reason for putting it under business rescue is that the board was of the view that the company is able to be rescued. The radical restructuring option through the business rescue practitioner was an ideal option, and I'll explain to you as we proceed with the presentation. SAA was financially distressed, as we indicated. It was unable to pay its obligations when they are due and payable. Government was unable to continue providing guarantees to SAA. The top travel insurance companies withdrew their cover. IATA also requested a government guarantee. The flight center had also, at that time, withdrew selling SAA tickets. And the board was left with no option but to take a board resolution to place SAA under business rescue. Mr. Les Matheson and Mr. Sivu and Ndongwana who are behind us were appointed as the joint business rescue practitioners. There were basically two options. Either you place a company under business rescue if you are of the belief that the company can be rescued, or you place it under liquidation if you are of the view that the company cannot be rescued. Liquidation will have had dire consequences for SAA. There will have been a massive loss of jobs. It will have impacted confidence of the market on our aviation assets, and it will have been a reputational challenge for our country. So as a result, that was really not taken as an option. Now, what is business rescue? If a company is financially distressed and unable to pay its debts when they are due and payable, it can be placed under business rescue. Business rescue can be done voluntarily by resolution of the board. Like in an SAA instance, the board took that resolution. Or it can be done compulsory by application to court by either a shareholder, a creditor, a union, or an employee. But it's important to note that for business rescue to succeed, there is what is called a post-commencement finance. When a company is in business rescue, it continues to operate. So the post-commencement finance can be defined as like an oxygen that will enable the company to continue to operate. Without a post-commencement finance, the company will definitely head into liquidation. And legally, while the business is in business rescue, there is a moratorium on legal proceedings against the company. The obligations, other than the employee's obligations, may be suspended. And it's important to indicate that the company's directors continue to exercise their fiduciary functions, but in accordance with the instructions of the business rescue practitioners. I will explain later what are the different roles of the practitioners and the different roles of the board and the role of the shareholder. In terms of the law, the business rescue practitioner is required to develop a business rescue plan, which effectively is a plan to rescue the company, which will be voted on by the creditors. And once the creditors have voted on it and accepted it, then the practitioner is responsible for its implementation with the board and the management. I'll now move on to the powers of the business rescue practitioners. They take over the full management control of the company in substitution of the board. So they take over the company, the board is still there, the management is still there, but they act under the instructions of the business rescue practitioner. The practitioners are officers of the court, and they must report to the court during the business rescue process. I will explain the implications of business rescue on the PFMA later on. With regard to the directors, they must continue to exercise their functions and their fiduciary duties, but under the authority of the business rescue practitioner. And furthermore, the directors must cooperate with the business practitioner and give the business rescue practitioners all the information that are requested. It is important to note that shareholder rights still exist in business rescue. The shareholders are entitled to receive any notice, for example, of any decisions concerning the business rescue. Shareholders are entitled to participate in any court proceedings during business rescue. The shareholders can also vote or reject the proposed business rescue plan, especially if that plan will change the shareholding, because government then is the shareholder. It is also important to indicate that the PFMA still applies even when a company is in business rescue. So the minister is still the executive authorities. The obligations in terms of the PFMA still applies and also applies to the business rescue practitioners. When does the business rescue proceedings end? They end when the court set it aside through the setting aside of the resolution or order that began the business rescue, or the company is placed into liquidation. Furthermore, the practitioners have a right to file with the CIPC a notice of termination of the business rescue proceedings. Or if the business rescue plan has been adopted, the practitioner can file a notice of substantial implementation of the plan. So when the practitioners are the view that the plan has been substantially implemented, then they can end the business rescue. Now, in terms of the way forward, as we had indicated, the business rescue practitioners are developing a business rescue plan. In development of that plan, they will have to consult with the creditors and other affected persons, including the shareholder, the trade union employees or representation, and the employees or their representatives, and the management of the company. So it's a consultative process to develop this business rescue plan to rescue the company. The plan must be published, and within then 10 days of being published, a creditors meeting must be convened to consider the plan. The necessary notices must be given to the affected person, and that business rescue plan will be put to a vote. And once it is voted and agreed to, the business rescue practitioner will then implement it substantially, and then once the process ends, hand over the company to the minister and the board of directors. Thank you. I would like to address the issue of the tabling of the annual financial statement as required by the committee. There are two bases on which you can finalize and ultimately table the annual financial statement and annual report. One is on a going concern basis, when you are of the view that the company can be able to operate. Or two, on a liquidation basis.
Have you circulated that document?
I think we have it. We'll circulate it. So for SAA, as we have already said, is in financial distress. Now, if the annual financial statement and the annual report can be tabled, it will effectively be tabled on a liquidation basis, effectively placing SAA into liquidation. We note that Section 65(1) of the PFMA provides that the annual financial statement and annual report must be tabled within 1 month after the board has received the audit report. And we know that we are not in compliance with that section. But if you look at Section 65(2), it provides that if the executive authority fails to table the annual report and AFS of the public entity, the executive authority must table a written explanation setting out the reason why they are not tabled. So the law gives provision for the minister to give reasons why the annual financial statement cannot be tabled. So there is a provision of the law that enables us to do that. So as a result, that's why the financials of SAA have not been tabled, because effectively if they are tabled, we are actually putting it into liquidation. Thank you.
Chairperson, just to sum up, SAA did go, as a result of a board decision, into business rescue formally on the 6th of December 2019, firstly. Secondly, as was pointed out by Mr. Makobe, the business rescue practitioners have to, or rather the board had to come to the view that SAA was in financial distress. Once it comes to that view, it then has various options, including trying to restructure the entity itself, liquidate the entity, or get it into business rescue. Crucial to this process was the availability of funding. And a fair amount of reliance in previous years has been placed on the private sector providing the funding. And the funding in this instance could only be provided if it was placed by the board in business rescue. So you'll hear a lot about post-commencement finance, which Mr. Makobe mentioned in his presentation. And as the process of diagnosis of the problem continues, the practitioners then also have to come to a view which says the this is a business that is rescuable. It will also come to a view that this business is not rescuable. If it comes to that view, then obviously the next logical thing is liquidation. So in this instance, the practitioners, after doing the assessment, came to the view that this is rescuable. But it is rescuable not as it exists at the moment, because those losses that we see as a consequence of poor contracting, overpricing, corruption over a period of time, and mismanagement of SAA, choices about aircraft. Most of the aircraft that SAA has in its possession at the moment are leased, which means that you have a base cost that every flight has to account for in terms of the leasing cost. And that then becomes part of the restructuring that has to be undertaken. So they take a view which in the, eventually will emerge in the business rescue plan, which will say, well, in what state can SAA survive as a viable business into the future? Secondly, what kind of restructuring needs to be undertaken? For example, a choice will have to be made about which routes continue and which routes don't. And we've had some statements in that regard over the last 10 days or so. But depending on the choice that one makes, as the rescue practitioners, but also as a stakeholder, and as a shareholder and other stakeholders as well, on the routes, then a particular fleet of aircraft are necessary to match those routes. So the question is, what are the negotiations with lessors and others about the future of the aircraft or the kind of fleet that is actually required? And that has implications eventually for staffing as well. But SAA still also carries a big overhead in terms of very large head office and other expenses that make many of the routes unprofitable. If you take the core costs, many of the routes could be profitable. So there are airlines which buy aeroplanes, have no monthly or yearly or annual costs that are attached. The aircraft is within their possession as owners, and having paid for the aircraft, that's not a continuous cost that you carry in respect of the routes, and therefore the cost of the routes as well. So those are some of the elements that will begin to emerge as the business rescue plan is formulated going into the future. So the key issue as we go forward is the provision of further post-commencement finance. There's been some money coming from the fiscus. There's been some money coming from lenders. There's money that's now been provided by a DFI, and a constant preoccupation is how do we manage this process in a way in which the pressure on the fiscus is removed to the best extent possible, and at the same time, the outcome is a viable airline that can grow into the future, which is the object of the exercise as far as business rescue is concerned. So we can take any questions, Chair, that your members might have.
Okay. Thank you very much for that update. I just want to, before I hand over to members, to say to you, DDG, we hear what you are saying about the provisions of submission, and we are very aware of that. But it must be very clear to yourselves and SAA that we seated here are not in agreement with a prolonged non-submission of non-financial statements. It has been 2 years, we're going on three. And the process that we wanted to initiate was to develop a roadmap which would lead to submission. So whilst the provisions may be there, the application of any provision needs to be rational. And in the last meeting we had with SAA, this was explained to the department and SAA that we remain of the view that a process must be set into motion, and we wanted to interact with the board. Well, then and we were going to SAA, as you know, in December to have a discussion about how that would happen. I would not want to say we are overtaken by events, but things happened, to put it that way. So whilst because the issue you are raising was addressed, in fact, in this very room, insofar as the issue of submissions was concerned. So just on a scope of perspective, that whilst there is an understanding of the prevailing realities as you have spelled them out, we presented to SAA and the department that particular outlook from our side, that in the final analysis we are duty-bound ourselves to ensure that there is no prolonged non-submission. And the fundamental reality is that we do not want SAA to open the floodgates of precedence with other entities, because we met with the other entities that had not submitted. So I hope you will appreciate from that perspective the position that we had taken. We are not dictating when, but we are saying a process must follow, which would ensure that because that provision is an exception, not a norm. So when you are in 2 years of non-submission going on three, you must expect us to raise our eyebrows. So I think that we must find each other on that one, so that there is no gray area. I just wanted to respond to the last part of the issue that you had raised, because fundamentally and ultimately, that still needs to happen. Right, Chair, is there any initial motion on your side? We can go to questions. All right, colleagues. All right, Chair, you will assist me with your members. Some I may not know. I'll take Honorable Liz, and I'll take Honorable Mente, then Honorable Kachale, and Honorable Swartz, and then we'll take a next round of hands. All right, Honorable Liz? That debate will be the last one in that round. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some clarity about how we're going to handle. Are we going to do it on a question and answer basis, which I would suggest is the way to do it?
Given the fact that we are a joint session and there's a large number of persons, may I restrict each member to 3 questions and then we'll come again for another round?
I'm happy with that.
All right.
Very
so
happy.
3 questions
with that.
Each member?
The minister had suggested 5 questions, but 3 will work
yes,
as well.
But if he was chairing, yes. All right.
Thank
three
you, Mr.
questions.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly on the question of the section that gives provision for reasons for not tabling. It doesn't give authority not to table. It gives authority to give reasons for not tabling, but I think it's a bit of a lacuna that it doesn't actually say, well, once you've given reasons, then you don't have to give table for any particular period or forever or at all. But let's leave that aside. It's a legal issue, that which I don't know the answer to. Mr. Chairman, can I ask, we've heard the process that was followed to arrive at business rescue. It actually started a few years ago with suggestions about business rescue, but we won't go down that route. But may I ask, I have submitted a PIA application, but my information is that the board resolved before business rescue resolution to liquidate the airline. Is that true or is that not true? We're going to get an answer or we're going to go on?
You want to go on?
Go on, great, okay. So yeah, that, please, if I could. Then, from the position of the business rescue practitioners, Mr. Chairman, I assume they're going to answer some questions as well. Not about the plan, I think that's clear, we can't, but about what has been happening up until now. The question, let me ask the question and let's see who's going to answer it. The 2 billion rand was made available by commercial banks, as I understand it, and I'm now talking third hand because we haven't had a formal report about these things. But 2 billion rand was made available early in December, and that was on the basis of what? Were there further guarantees issued? Were those guarantees issued with the full blessing of National Treasury and the Minister of Finance? And so, yeah, when are they repayable? That 2 billion rand, again, it's hearsay, I don't have firm information, was used up by last week of January, as I understood it, and there was then an urgent need for further cash. There was reports of salaries not being able to be paid, and so there was an approach apparently to the DBSA, who made 3.5 billion rand available. I think that's a matter of the record. I don't think I need confirmation of that. But what I do need is to know how long that 3.5 billion rand will last, when it will be repaid, and how it will be repaid, and who by. I know, Mr. Chairman, that sounds like a whole lot of questions, but I think the thrust of it is
I know you. I'll tell you when you've accepted.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're very kind. So I have other questions, but I shall leave it at that for now.
All right, Honourable Mentor.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the first thing I would like to know is, I understand we are in a joint committee, so we deal with all the matters, whether general or financial. The first thing I would like us to be at ease with is the fact that we are talking numbers in terms of whatever bailout SAA requires, but we do not have a breakdown of that finance. Why is it required? What is it going to do? The reason why I'm asking that question, Chairperson, the last time SAA tabled its AFS was 2016-17 report. And in that particular report, the shortfall of SAA was only 2 billion. We do not know now if they need 4, 5, 10 or 20 billion and why. Because in terms of the income of SAA was around 30 billion to 31, and operations were around 33 billion. And from there, there was a plan in place around 2018 to deal with the matters that the minister was mentioning earlier on, of contracts that were wrongly done and loss of aircraft and leases and everything. There was a plan in place. But we can't jump all those steps and have a minister to write a presentation in terms of Section 65. I understand Section 65 is there to assist if you cannot present your financial. But writing that presentation of Section 65, the minister ought to know and put systems in place and consequences on people who failed to carry out their duties in the entity. Now, what I would be at ease with, Chairperson, is to know how much exactly does SAA require, what for, and how did it rise from the 2 billion of 2016-17 financial year to this point? What is it going to do? We even identified DG, there was a company at SAA situated at the, I think it's closer to SAA Technical. There was a company which you do not need there that's managing your equipment. I don't know, is it KMVA or something like that? There's a logistic company that's situated at the airport, which you do not need. A company that is just merely there to manage your own equipment. You buy it yourself, but someone else is managing it. For what? And it was taking millions out of the fiscus of SAA. There was an issue of technicians and spares disappearing at Technica. That issue was not dealt with, but we just want money. We want to know why we want money and what should it do. And we have to save SAA. I agree. I agree with your all the business rescue saving method. I agree. Let's save it. But we need to know, we can't be putting money down the drain. Let's remove all the waste and losses on the way. From 2016, can you take us to now, from that 2 billion loss, 2 billion surplus you needed, how did it get to the point where it is today? And what happened? When the minister wrote the presentation, there should have been consequences that happened in between. Who lost their job? Who is refunding the money that they wasted? Do we have those companies that were identified as back as 2018 removed at SAA because they are not needed? They are just a waste. The last one on this chair, the issue of the board taking the decision of saving, that was fine. And then I know we don't want to talk to the player, but if we can also be taken on board in terms of what were the decisions of the board, because we met the board as SCOPA. They gave us a turnaround plan. It was proper. But all of a sudden, we are seeing things going, spiraling all the way down. And the plan is not kicking in. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Honorable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the appointment of the business rescue practitioners, a report was required and clearly an extension was given to present this report at a later stage. My question is, in the interim, I think it's reasonable to ask not with specific regard to the plan, because that has been addressed, it will come later, what led, if you don't mind answering, to the rationale for the direction chosen? And the direction chosen was a binary choice between liquidation and restructuring, and clearly you've chosen restructuring. Now, I think it would be reasonable to ask if you can share some information as to what informed your belief to take that particular choice under a certain set of circumstances. Can you unpack some of those so that we can be wiser under the circumstances? Because the current presentation that we received is clearly procedural and in the public domain and doesn't take us much further. Thank you.
Right, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, Minister, you indicated that we know the background to the state of the SAA, we know before the Zondo Commission, we know in the delinquency trial of the former board chair that is happening, but you also indicated that this is the first public entity to be placed in business rescue and that there are lessons to be learned. And I think, I don't know if this is appropriate, but maybe you could give us an indication for us, those lessons that are being learned, the interaction between the Companies Act and the PFMA, considering this is largely uncharted territory, although there is legislation. And of course, we as Parliament, the challenge we have in exercising our oversight, given that the business rescue practitioners are now taken over as the accounting officers, we still need to exercise our oversight. So it is a bit of a challenge, understanding that the plan that will be produced still needs to be discussed in that, but obviously there are some critical issues now, such as the change in routes, that are in the public domain, the possible sale of aircraft. I'm not sure to which level we can engage on those aspects at this stage. And, of course, the issues of the finances. When we met as public enterprises with the SAA board last year, there was a strong indication of large capital injections. We see now there are a degree of capital injections for the post commencement financing. But the question is, how long will that last? I think that's a very key question. And then those lessons that are learnt. And then a question to me is, being, considering this is uncharted territory, to what degree does one have aviation experts that are advising the business rescue practitioners? Thank you, Chair.
Right, Honourable Hatebe, will be the last one in this round, and then we'll get responses and come to the second set of questions.
Thank you, Chair. My interest is on the financials, as it was clearly indicated in terms of Section 65, 1 and 2, and if you are unable to submit, you then submit a written explanation to Parliament. But I think Section 65.1 still is applicable, that you must table. It does not give you a leeway of not tabling because you have given us explanation. The last time we were here, we were told that the reason why you cannot table the financials, you could not guarantee the company continuing as a going concern. And there was an undertaking from the shareholder side, which is a government, to pump up 2 billion. And when that 2 billion would have been given, they would have been able to submit those financials. We have seen and read on the media that there has been funding provided by a certain bank. We still have not received the financials. So my issue, relying on Section 65.2, does not give you a leeway to ignore 65.1 that you must submit, and you cannot perpetually rely on Section 65.2 and pretend as if Section 65.1 does not exist. So I was sitting here is to get a sense and an understanding. When are you planning to submit the financials? Without those who are unable to interact and understand the nature and the extent to which intervention is needed. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. Minister, I'll hand over to you and your team. I just want to add one thing on the issue of financials because it's still an outstanding matter. You've spoken about this being uncharted waters. The last time SAA appeared before us, a commitment was made that, or rather, the basis not to submit was also informed by a legal opinion. We asked to see that legal opinion so that we could understand better why. We have still not received it. Because we went and consulted Parliamentary Legal Services, and it would have been in our interest to look at both to understand better. So we would still want that. Because, Minister, I think as a general comment, we have been receiving very little joy insofar as the receipt of information as and when we've requested it, timelines not being met and so on. So I think you must understand also the anxieties of colleagues from that perspective, that as and when we've required and set deadlines, they've not been met. All right, we'll hand over to you for the response, and then colleagues will take a second round of questions.
I think the question that I would like to get clarity and answer from is that when you have complied with Section 65.2, does that mean you are no longer obliged to implement 65.1? That's the question that I need to get a clear understanding.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Forever. So you have complied with Section 65.2. I am no longer going to comply with 65.1 forever.
All right. Okay.
That's the trend. You have not submitted two consecutive financials.
Okay, no, it's fine. We are in agreement with your outlook. Right.
Okay, these are the dilemmas of the first-time business rescue experience that we're going through. But let Mr. Makobe address the financials issue, and then I'll come in.
Actually, the converse of what you said is true. If you can't comply with 65.1, then you give the reasons in terms of 65.2. But of course, it doesn't take away the obligation. to provide, but it gives you a leeway to be able to address the going concern issues so that you can comply with 65-4. And the indulgence we are requesting is that it's not business as usual. We've got a business rescue practitioner that is preparing a business rescue plan. The plan that will say SAA can be rescued. And once the plan is implemented, then we will be able to table those financials on a going concern basis. So it's not a permanent non-compliance with 65-1. 65-2 just gives you a leeway to address whatever challenges you have to comply with 65-1. And we are saying the business rescue practitioners are finalizing the plan. And one of the requirements for them to finalize the plan is to stand in front of the creditors and say, we are of the view that this company can be rescued. It is only on that basis that the creditors will vote in favor of the business rescue plan. And once that is done, then the SAA will be on a good footing, and then the financials
I'm going to respectfully just cut you there, because we're not going to agree on this thing. And I think let's avoid the situation of trying to. I think let's leave it at the acceptance that was there, that you have not complied. And I've said we have noted the set of circumstances which you spelled out, and we want a roadmap which will lead towards submission. Because you don't submit for the basis of a going concern, you submit on the basis of compliance. Because the financials must tell us the story as it is, going concern or not. And as I've said, as far as we are concerned, you exhausted your leeway. 2 years of non-submission going on 3, you have exhausted it. So I think the agreement we had the last time, let's not amend it now. There is agreement that you have not complied insofar as submission is concerned, and your leeway can't be open-ended. So I get a sense what you say will complicate matters, and then we'll not have the discussion we should have here. So, colleagues, if we can leave it at that our position remains unchanged insofar as the submissions are concerned. Right, Minister? Let's carry on with the other responses.
So, on this matter, Chair, just one concluding remark. We are going to take proper legal advice and let you have that as well, so that we all understand that whilst there's 65-1 and 65-2 and what your committee's requirements are, there's the reality of a business that was failing. There was the reality of, and if you look at that slide, I think it's slide 5 or 6 in your pack, those are the implications of liquidation. Liquidation would basically mean at a particular time tomorrow morning, everything ceases. Planes are on the ground, staff are told go home, you have no pay, creditors are going to line up, and depending on what's available as assets within the particular entity, you'll get a bit of whatever it is that you've actually lent. And I think the board endeavored to avoid that scenario, right? And that's where business rescue comes in at the end of the day. So this is not about compliance, my respectful view. Not about compliance or non-compliance. It's about the reality of managing failing SOEs and how do we deal with them in a way in which we save as much as we can, secure as many jobs as we can, and secure whatever value lies in those assets as we can as the state. I mean, we could all have thrown up our arms and said liquidate, and that's the end of the story. But we'll get a legal opinion on this, and we'll come back to you on that. And how we match, if you like, the requirements of 65 with the current realities, and how do we get maybe give you some financial information which indicates the status of what's going on as opposed to financial accounts. And there's a difference between the two. But if you give us an opportunity of a week or two, we'll try and get a view on that. Then coming to the questions, Chairperson. So Mr. Lees's first point was around 65, so we've addressed that. And then the question of why Did the board decide at some stage to liquidate? I'm not aware of that. Because their final decision was to go into business rescue as the best possible route forward for the country and for the assets and for the people working at SAA as well, and the kind of value that we would get out of that proposition. All guarantees in the final instance granted by the Treasury. So I can say to the Minister of Finance, I recommend that you, or I concur with the need for a guarantee, but ultimately he's the decision maker as the guardian of the fiscus. And when the Minister presents the budget on the 26th, you'll see what the intentions of the Treasury are. They're still working on those details. So we need to give them an opportunity to actually do so. And as my colleague will explain to you in a moment, but let me attempt to do it nonetheless, why do we need post-commencement finance? So from the 6th of December until, if you like, the diagnostic is finished about whether this business can be rescued or not rescued, and what will have to happen if it is to be rescued, the business continues as it is. So its expense structure, its cost structure, continues during that particular period. And therefore, you've got to feed it. And that's what post-commencement finance is about. So anybody who goes to court and says, I want to liquidate company XYZ, has also got to come forward and say, I have PCF in one form or another. Otherwise, that whole process doesn't go anywhere. There are other instances of a mine involving the Guptas and so on, where workers were not paid, I can't remember, maybe for a year or two. I don't even know whether that issue is resolved today. That went into business rescue, but there was no PCF coming from any source. And it's ultimately workers who bear the consequences of these sorts of things. So the PCF is required to keep the company going until the plan is developed, the plan is accepted, and the plan is implemented at the end of the day. So the business rescue practitioners and ourselves as the shareholder have got to constantly match the question of costs versus revenue. Right. Now, then we come to the question the Honorable Mente was asking, which is in relation to why was the finance required? So firstly, this is the reason. You've got to continue the business until you reorganize the business. And you trim it in whatever way you can and get the right cost structure, the right strategy, the right routes, the right aircraft, and the right staffing. That would actually enable this particular entity to survive. But remember, take your minds back to about November last year when we had a 10-day or 2-week strike by two of the 7 unions that are recognized within this company. And immediately during that strike period, an announcement by one of the unions that it's not safe to fly on SAA. The week after that, what we had is the point that is made during the course of the presentation. Ticket insurance in the UK was withdrawn and bookings fell by 85%. Right? 65% of SAA's income is from foreign flights or international flights. So then late November, early December, there are, 2 insurers here in South Africa that are prominent as far as ticket insurance is concerned, and both of them withdrew their insurance as well. The good news is that over the last week, the practitioners have been able to get those two companies to come back into the insuring of tickets. Now, what that means is that each time you or I buy a flight ticket, that ticket is insured. If it's not insured, you're taking all the risk. If there's a delay, a cancellation, or if it doesn't fly, or whatever the case might be. If you have the insurance, you can actually ask the insurance to pay whatever it is that is there in the contract, and you can get on to the next flight that's actually available that they would actually pay for. So ticket insurance is absolutely critical to get an airline working. And if you withdraw all of these basic things, like insurance, then you already are, in addition to the strike, causing further decline in the revenue side and confidence in the airline. The third thing that then happened in early December, late November as well, and during the course of December, is travel agents One of them was very prominent, Flight Center, for example, informed all their branches, don't book anybody who comes to you on SAA flights, right? And that is now being corrected as well. Both the practitioners and myself and our team have met the Association of South African Travel Agents recently, and they have confidence in the airline and the product itself, and they believe that there is a viable proposition to pursue and that they will support bookings on SAA, because that confidence level is absolutely critical. So the finance is required also to compensate for the loss of revenue on the other hand. So if all members of parliament, for example, only traveled on SAA, and you know we use all sorts of airlines, because ultimately it's the fiscus that's paying for our tickets, it'll start making a difference. If every government employee only traveled on SAA, and maybe the committees can recommend that to government, then all the money goes to SAA. And now you're increasing the revenue side of, you know, some of our political parties don't travel SAA. You only see them on alternate flights. well, you know, the occasional versus always is a big difference, Chair, with respect. So the question is, or rather, the issue is, you've got to keep this company going, but at the same time, we've got to watch out for overextending ourselves in terms of the PCF required. So there's a very neat balance between keeping alive what you have, on the one hand, and not overextending it to the point where nobody's going to provide money for the PCF itself. And so constantly between the Treasury and ourselves, we do the best we can to assist the practitioners with the PCF question, and I've made recommendations to them and will continue to do so to not keep expanding the PCF requirements and act more firmly on some of the issues that Honorable Minte is certainly talking about. So give us the name of that company when you have it, please, and any other information that would help us to make this whole process move forward. In relation to the board turnaround plans, SAA, and if you saw that slide on revenue and losses, Chair, it has a number of consulting firms' names underneath. So there have been endless number of reports, endless number of turnaround plans. What's the big problem? The big problem is the state's capability to implement them. Right, so you had turnaround plan one, you had accelerated turnaround plan, and so on. Excuse me. And if you don't implement those plans, and if you keep hesitating about them, excuse me, then you end up where we are in the current situation. So the board had every good intention, but it didn't have the management capability at SAA to make things happen. In the future, if we are able to go through this process successfully, we'll have to make sure that we have the right aviation skills available at a management level to do the things that really need to be done and with the expertise that is necessary. Mr. Swart asks the question about aviation experts. There is an advisory firm that the practitioners have deployed to assist them. We as a department have also reactivated one of those companies that has advised government before and build on the old recommendations that they have made. And within the next week or so, we'll have a better idea of some of the issues that are confronting us. The sale of aircraft, I think, refers to the A340s, which preceded the business rescue process, because there's a lot of technical issues that SAA thought they were resolving in terms of how expensive those aircraft are to actually fly. Lessons in terms of PFMA and Companies Act, we're still digesting this one, but amongst them would be precisely the point, if a business rescue practitioner becomes an accounting authority, then the accounting authority is accountable in the first instance to the executive authority in terms of the PFMA. And in that instance, once the plan is published and if it is responsible for implementation of the plan, then it has to account to various structures that an executive authority is accountable to in terms of the Constitution. So I think those are most of the questions, but we'll reflect on Mr. Swartz's question a bit more, and when we revert to you, we can talk about it in a month or two, and we have a bit more experience under our belt. Thank you, Chair.
All right, colleagues, can we take the second round of questions?
And I think the first round needs to be replied fully. I haven't had a reply to my questions about the 2 billion, the 3.5 billion, when.
All right. Chair.
That's the 2 billion.
Okay, we'll come to Lukacha. Let's finish on this matter. Yes, Minister.
Sorry, Chair. You asked the question about guarantees. I answered that question. When is it repayable? I said let the budget announcements take place. Part of those announcements is how all these, not only these amounts, but previous amounts that have been borrowed will be paid. So there's a bigger pool of debt, if you like, that has to be resolved. The further cash, how long will it last? Into the early weeks of March, when is it required to be repaid? I think the agreement, I haven't seen the details, but it's about mid-year. By whom? Well, if you lend us some money, they'll pay it. Otherwise, we'll have to make some plan. So these are moving parts here. These are not fixed things. And every single day we have to apply our minds to this, to keep this process afloat and save as many jobs as possible if we can.
All right, Honorable Kachara has got a clarity seeking on his follow-up.
Thank you. The question I asked was not addressed. I asked a question with regard to beyond the headline news in terms of the choice to restructure. What was the rationale that informed this, given that there's an extension being granted to present the plan and we're waiting for that, and I'm not asking for right now for the plan per se, but I'm interested in the rationale which led to the choice, and I think that needs addressing and it hasn't been addressed. Thank you.
Chair, if the word restructuring refers to restructuring in the business rescue process, then I've answered it. Because it is basically saying that we didn't think that the liquidation option is the best option for all the stakeholders. Right. Firstly. But secondly, that there's something rescuable. I also said that there's value, better value to be obtained for the assets that we have under the restructured option in business rescue than liquidation. The liquidation has all the catastrophes, that some of which I outlined earlier on. So I hope that satisfies Mr. Kachalia.
Right. Right, Honourable Mendy, you've got a clarity?
Now, on the matter of 2016-17, there was a shortfall of 2 billion, but now the shortfall is over 4 billion. What informed that?
She had raised that in the context that the last we heard, the revenue was 31 billion roundabout and the expenditure was 33 billion. That's a figure that in fact was given to SCOPA and the Fifth Parliament by SAA themselves.
That graph in some ways reflects that, Chair, that essentially it was making losses. So if you keep making losses, and if you're not bringing in revenue, then the gap between revenue and costs keeps increasing and leaves us in the position we find ourselves in. And the strike and other things contributed to the widening of that gap. Because if you lose confidence, less people fly. And remember that for about a year and a half or two, from late 2017, the strategy was to shrink to grow. It wasn't under our guard at that time. So in other words, for example, there used to be almost hourly flights between Joburg and Cape Town. Now you don't get them that frequently. Similarly, Joburg-Durban, you don't get them that frequently. So frequency was cut by the management at the time in order to save and hopefully to grow. But if you keep shrinking and you keep making losses, then you begin to get into the kind of position we found ourselves in last year.
And of course, Durban, Cape Town doesn't have SAA. So if you're making a plea that we must fly SAA, Durbanites like myself don't have that option.
Well, it depends how many people you bring onto the flight.
But indeed, I mean, it's right. Let's take the next round. Can I request that we take, and then please note the outstanding matters, because we will give other members, and then all questions will be responded to, I can assure you. We will not leave here until we've satisfied ourselves accordingly. I'm going to take Honorable Somyo, Honorable Utelezi, Honorable Piri. Let me take all these hands, right, so that we don't keep coming and going. May I start with Honorable Somyo? Move this way to the front, and then Honorable Van Minen, I'll start with you this way, and we'll go that way. So we'll take all the questions, because if we keep doing rounds, and then questions build on questions. Colleagues, are we agreeable to that? And can we be precise, succinct, and pointed to cover time? We are here until latest 1:30, but I still request that we are pointed in our questions. All right, colleagues, Honorable Somi, you first off the bat.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My apologies. I'm guided here by the fact that a presentation has been made based on the Companies Act, and they're sitting on the scorpers' intention. When the minister's team outlines to us on the basis of Section 150 that the business rescue practitioner ought to prepare a plan as is on the way of doing so, and the time might have been outlined in terms of expedition of the finalization of that report, and as well, we look into the effects of the act as well, that plan ought to be published, and after publishing, ten days or so, there ought to be other processes which are somewhat outlined. They are closer to the finalization of that kind of a report. Our basic interest has been on the actual capability of seeing an institution which meets the requirements of its own existence. When the board was here, it met us, they outlined a number of challenges, and they made some kind of a view in terms of their proposition in as far as their way forward is concerned, and since then, the appointment of the rescue practitioner, which I think for us is acceptable, more acceptable to say, now we are given by the minister some kind of a view as to this is what is pertaining at this stage in as far as that work is concerned. What I would only be comfortable with then thereafter would be that, as per our expectation, when would the minister come back to us? I'm constrained to get into asking all these other questions, because all these other questions are not serving the purpose. Because the specificity of any other thing is going to be on the basis of the report. In absence of that report, all other things are going to not serve that kind of a people. So my view would be that maybe the minister could say, well, in terms of that required plan, we have these timelines, and for me, I'll be getting back into this parliament with that kind of report. Whatever it says, I'll be back into a parliament to account on the basis of that report, and therefore we close the meeting. I think that's what we need to somewhat comfortably be advised on in as far as this is concerned.
Okay, I note that. I will not present that proposal just yet. But I note it, and the minister will respond on the timelines, right? We want to move in a sequence, colleagues, just this way, so that I don't have to keep on interjecting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Partly I'm covered by my colleague here, because in the minister's response, I tend to believe that what informed the decision in terms of what my colleague Kachali said was to avoid the catastrophe that he mentioned. I will take that as the reason why you chose to go business rescue. But now, you highlighted the number of plans and strategies that were prepared before, which didn't work. And you cited the state capability to implement those. Then I would love to understand now, how are you convinced that after all has been done, then the state will be able to have that capability to implement those plans accordingly? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the presentation that was done, if we can just get clarity that on the time frames that the business rescues here. Your presentation says that after 3 months, if the process is not complete, the business rescue team will start giving reports at the end of each month. So the 3 months that we are talking of, it's on page 10, Minister. I'm on page 10. If the business rescue proceedings have not ended within 3 months after the start of the proceedings, the practitioner must, that part. So I just want to understand here, are we counting this from the 16th or will it be after there has been some sort of finalization in terms of the business rescue team starting the official work of working? But you know, Minister, because we had a board that came here before, and South African Airways is always telling us of losses and all these things here, I just have an interest, even if I'm not answered today, that South African Airways has an agreement with South African Airlink of 28 years. What percentage does South African Airways hold to Airlink? What is the percentage that it holds? Because we are talking rents and cents, we are talking business rescue, so I think it is for us, will make us comfortable to know that. And also that South African Airways does the handling of infrastructure for the same Airlink in terms of bookings, movement of people, of bags. That South African Airways also does the servicing and the technical service for Airlink free as part of a deal in exchange for the so-called 2% franchise fee. And there is no evidence of such. Look, South African Airways has all these things. The board was here. We have read reports. But because of nobody ever coming to account on the finances, we don't know. So on this one, I just want to know, is there any evidence of dividends to date on the servicing that you give Airlink? And if it is true as well, true or false, that you do these technical services for Airlink for free as South African Airways? Well, of course, because of your 28 years deal. So, in fact, the next time you come in front of us so that we understand what this 28 deal package entails, so that we don't have these things going around, because obviously if that is there. Also, if we can get an analysis of South African Airways Express, which was a failing entity. You were not taking up its routes, but you let it compete with Airlink, so that we understand that South African Express, what is the relationship with you and Airlink, because it seems like Airlink has got a lot of babysitting from your side, either than anybody else. We also need the comparison of pilot salaries between the major airlines operating in South Africa, including their packages linked to their families.
And also, just as a matter of interest, why can we not consolidate South African Airways, Mango, and South African Express into a single entity and rationalize the operation, including reclaim recruitative routes currently dominated by Air Link?
All right, three questions, remember, each. So you can come back in the next round.
And my last question is that...
Let's stick to three questions. You can ask that question.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll come back again.
Right. Honorable Maha, we'll just now move in the sequence.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, all. Let me first appreciate the presentation from DDG. I don't know whether it's DDG or acting DDG and the minister. I would like to know, Chairperson, whether the previous speakers made mention of the turnaround plan which was made by the board. And when we looked at that plan, there were critical points that when we looked at them that can assist to change the present problems that they are experiencing. Are they going to use some of the points within the turnaround plan, or they are going to come with a new plan? That's the first question. Secondly, I would like to concur on what Honorable Somyu alluded to. My worry is around the time frame, when the plan is going to kick off the ground, because I believe they are busy doing it. When is it going to be ready? Secondly, the other point which was raised, the state capability to implement that plan, because there can be a plan, a nice plan, but no one to implement it as per the skills that are very scarce around the department itself. I don't know whether there is a program which runs concurrently in terms of the skills audit that is available there, so that at least when the plan is in place, there are officials or personnel that are going to implement that plan. Those are critical questions from my side. Thank you very much.
Right, Honorable Piri. Honorable Van Minion, we'll start with you at the back, then move up.
Thank you, Chair. I'm partly covered by Mente, but in the interest of ordinary citizens, I want a confirmation to the acting DDG and the minister. What if I heard you correctly? Just confirm that you are saying that's my... What I've understood from what you have alluded, you are saying you did not submit for the past 2 years your AFS deliberately because you wanted to save, not to go on liquidation. Is it what I got from your responses, Minister, and the TDG, as you were presenting, to say deliberately so? If we could have thrown a towel, it means, or published the AFS in the public, then automatically it was going to be a liquidation. So that's why I'm saying it's not a question, but it's a confirmation. All my colleagues have asked that question, but I think for the interest of ordinary citizens to understand what made you not to go to observe the issue of Section 65, Subsection 1. Then secondly, Chair, I'll also concur with my colleague on the issue of the timelines. Specifically, when are we expecting the plan to be presented, even though it must not go on the 10 days, but specifically, when are you coming back? Are we starting to count from the day that the practitioners has been appointed, that 3 months, or you're going to give us a different date? Thanks, Chair.
All right, Honorable Van Minen.
Thank you, Chair. My question is related to the question asked by Honourable Kachalia. The Minister was talking about failing SOEs. Now, the concern with failing SOEs is that they are largely being bailed out with appropriations and taxpayers' money, resulting in devastating cuts to a lot of very critical departments and their budgets. I understand that there is a concern about the employees, concern, but I mean, in essence, are we not actually just looking at grandiose welfare systems? Would the economy not be better served by allowing private enterprise to take the place and actually running these companies where there is a need in the market? And related to that, I also want to know why the opportunities that were available in the last couple of years to sell SAA were not taken up, because that would have avoided this entire conundrum. And then finally, with SAA admitting that they cannot table the AFS, is this not coming perilously close to active insolvency because they are potentially disadvantaging creditors? Thank you.
All right. Honorable Maria, are you coming in? All right. Honorable Nkwankwa.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Mente covered a lot of questions I wanted to ask, but one question perhaps posed to the rest of us, not to the Minister. Is our problem not with Section 65.2? It's open-ended. It's open to abuse. It's perhaps what we need to address as Parliament. Because for as long as companies, they can always say that no, we're in compliance with Section 65.2, and then what are we going to say? Complain. Instead of addressing that loophole. I see there's a loophole there. Other people might hold a different view. It's okay. It's a democratic parliament. But I think it's something that we need to address. Otherwise, we're going to have more entities relying on Section 65.2, and I think we're going to encounter that problem as soon as they pick up that they can rely on it. The second issue, Chair, is that, Minister, I think the problem here is that perhaps what should happen when entities aren't able to submit financial statements, we must compel them to provide us with some management accounts information so that we can be able to properly oversee the work of the entities. It's difficult now. We are shooting in the dark because we don't have financial information that we can rely on. For example, you kept on pointing us to the time series, the graph here, this time series. But if you don't have the financial information at your fingertips, you can't even understand the scale of the problem, right? Now, when I look at the presentation in the agenda of today, that's perhaps the reason why I've been quiet, is that the entity, you've come to brief us about the decision which was taken in December. Now that you have briefed us about the decision that you have taken and the rationale behind you taking that decision, you must still tell us as to when we should expect the business rescue plan. Once we have those two, the meeting is over. Realistically speaking, because then you have to give us commitment around the financial issue or make a commitment to say that you'll be able to provide us with some management information as the committee. Secondly, the issue is to say, when are we going to get the business rescue plan? And because we don't have financial information on SAA, I don't see how we can ask you more questions on that, including the most very important questions that were asked by Honorable Mente earlier. To say we need to understand how did the losses accumulate over years. But without the financial information, those questions can't be answered. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Honorable Lamini, are you? Malanda. All right. Are we good this side? All right. Honorable Shabalala. Then we will validate the ku teaching.
Thank you, Chairperson. We had caucus with my partner and seated next to me that she'll start first, but it's fine.
Yeah,
let's respect the Chairperson.
Yeah.
Look, Chair, mine will be a comment, and comment will be that it is clear that the trauma that we're going through right now, it is a necessary trauma so that we save this national flag carrier. And we need so that then ultimately we have this drastically restructured so that it is viable and for future growth and sustainable business. Minister, the question about routes, the routes that not just only routes but the licensing that we have extended to other areas, I'm sure you will know them. What is your view on that insofar as perhaps suspending that? So that SAA can perhaps be of self-sufficient. That's one. I just want you prick on that. The labor part of things, we would expect that nothing will happen outside the labor law and requirements of Section 189 insofar as processes. Obviously, we don't want to preempt and go to premature debates but if you can just tell us what within the business rescue, insofar as the issue of labour, what is to be done. The comprehensive management team that needs to be assembled to implement the SAA rescue plan, when will it get underway? But insofar as the ANC is very clear that it wants this national fracking, and we want to see it being strategic, and that needs to continue. The last point, the new airline entering into a strategic equity and management partnership, which one is that?
Right, and then finally, Chichi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to start by saying we come here, all of us, excited because we want to add value. And if we sit here with a minister who tells us that he's still going to seek legal opinion on when or whether to submit the financial statements, clearly it tells us that we're dealing with another animal or dealing with something else. Because if this was your company and you're the shareholder and the executive is not submitting financial statements, surely we would have shot all of them. So SAA is an asset of the nation, and the nation out there wants to know what is happening. And you can't be using technicalities of section what. We're not interested in those things. You've got an entity. You're getting money. We need to know how you are managing that those funds. And it ends there. And the question that we should be asking here and now, Chairperson, is when are we getting the statement? Of whether we're getting them or not, that's not the question. Whether there's a legal opinion or not, we're not interested in those things. We want to know when are we getting the financial statements. And the minister, even when SAA is going to be under business rescue, he's still the executive, has the executive authority. So we're looking up to him to give us all the answers. He can't now want to withdraw from that. It's his responsibility. He must ensure that we get what we want. With the issue of the money, say we give them money, they get funding from somewhere. What is it that they're going to do differently to make sure that they take back SAA to profitability? Or should you already prepare another round of bailout? Should we start already after giving the money, start preparing for the bailout? Because what they are doing at SAA clearly is to run this company down to the ground. And all of us were defeated. We're folding our arms, we're pretending as if there's nothing we can do. There's everything that we can do. We can start by removing the minister himself and then go to the executive. We've got that those powers. And I'm going to suggest that if we're not going to be getting the financial statements, we remove all of them. And we get competent people who have the political willingness and the love, the best interest of the country at heart to save this national asset. How do you cancel a flight to Durban, the most busiest route, and yet you want to rescue SAA? And then you leave a flight from Johannesburg to Nelspruit. Like, how do you do that? So those are some of the things that you look and say, there's something bigger here that these people are doing. Now, the last issue, Chair, I know you said you must ask only three questions.
Yes, indeed.
The relationship with labor, because labor is a very important stakeholder. If you want to run your company very well, the first people that you need to have a good relationship with is labor. Now, we've got labor at SAA taking SAA to court because SAA announced that they will be cancelling the routes, which have got a direct impact on the employees of SAA. As we speak, we are being told, and the minister must come and tell us whether it's true or not, that the employees of SAA in Durban already, they've been told that they must not come to work starting from March. Is that true? And how was it done without consultation of the major stakeholders, which are the labor? I will pause right there, Chair, and then I'll come back.
Let's get the responses, and then we will come to any characters. Honorable Lisset had an issue that he wanted to follow up on, and then we will tie this down, colleagues, and then so that we can proceed. I know there's the prevailing discussion about financials. Like I've said, we have met with SAA and the department, and we have agreed that we are not in acceptance of their non-submission. and we were to develop a process and a roadmap towards submission. That remains firmly on the table. And Minister, you, on the issue of the legal advice opinion, SAA said they already have that. So we asked for it and we didn't receive it. But we had added the caveat that an opinion remains an opinion. The law is the law. And citing reasons, as 65.2 says, does not mean that the reasons can be accepted. So whilst we may have the proposals of amendments and so on, we consulted also ourselves, and we are of that view. When we parted ways with SAA, because I don't want this point lost, so we don't go back to issues we've agreed on. We have agreed with SAA on this matter. And so that's why I'm really trying to say, let's not go back to that discussion. We agreed. Unless now we are revoking that agreement. So the roadmap will be developed. It's non-negotiable, because what we don't want is half measures, because we normalize non-submission. So as far as we are concerned, that agreement remains firmly on the table. So I hope colleagues, we can accept that, because I fear that we will reopen that discussion and then amend it, causing problems to our own consistency. The roadmap will be developed, and it's precisely for that reason that the business rescue practitioners are here, so they also know and understand that our responsibilities, we are not shaking them off. All right, Minister, let's hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. On Honourable Somyo's point, and several other members as well, the three-month deadline takes us into March. So the business rescue practitioners have to put forward a plan by that time, and as soon as they are ready, Chair will inform you of that, and if the plan is accepted by the creditors, then we'll arrange for a presentation to you or the portfolio committee on public enterprises, or you could meet as joint committees, whatever you decide as chairpersons and committee members. On the question of capability to implement that, also several members raised, part of what we have to do is to bring in new expertise into the airline and use existing expertise that is there, and develop a team that is capable of running an airline. Not everybody has that skill, and some people have come short in that particular regard as well. So we're very aware of those limitations, and when we replenish the board, part of their responsibility, and we'll work with the practitioners in this regard as well, is to find the necessary skills to undertake the implementation. So on the Airlink issue, the acting DG will address that, but the percentage of shareholding that SAA has or government has in Airlink is just below 3%. I think it's 2.6 or 2.7%. But the acting DG will give you further information. The pilot salaries and benefits are regulated by what is called a regulatory agreement. It's what legally has been called an evergreen agreement, and it's one that has got ourselves into, or SAA into extreme difficulty, because this was negotiated somewhere in the early 1990s, I think. And the board, I think at some stage, had decided on a court action to review this agreement and its status. But I'm not aware of where in the court process that is. But at the moment, the Pilots Association is one of the seven recognized trade unions in SAA, and they are all talking to the practitioners to come to some understanding about the way forward on this question. SAX itself is, as you know, currently in business rescue as well. One of its creditors had approached the court, and the management and board there are also trying to figure out where we go, and there might be some complications arising from that. So whereas Mango, SAA Technical, Air Chefs, Voyager, all those are entities that are either subsidiaries or divisions of SAA as we know it. So the airline is one component, these are the other components. So there's SAA the group, SAA the airline, Mango the airline, South African Airways Technical is the technical component that services the aircraft, not only of SAA but other airlines as well. Air Chef supplies food, as you would know, both to SAA and Mango, and possibly has other customers that it supplies to as well as Air Express. So the future of all of those entities will have to be decided as we go forward. But on SAA Technical, I think Honorable Mente also raised this point, there was wholesale chaos there. It was 10 years ago, one of the leading technical companies or entities in the world, the best on the African continent, and once capture and corruption took over, it was decimated. And there's been a rebuilding process under the previous CEO, and there's a new CEO who comes from New Zealand who's now trying to patch something together. But there's a huge amount of value in SAA Technical that needs to be saved and utilized as well. Will the previous turnaround plans be utilized? I think there's good ideas in those plans. The practitioners will take them into account, and it'll be a waste of time to go and repeat everything. But we will suggest to them as well that they should do that. And I've addressed the question of when and the plan and the capability. Mr. Maskobe will address the Section 65 question. Unless, Chair, you think we've settled it for now. Honorable Feely, I think, asked the question. The plan question has been addressed. I'm sorry, I don't know the honorable member's name from the, I think, the DA. She describes failing SOEs as grandiose welfare systems. Hopefully not. What we want, as the President has said very clearly, state-owned entities that are clear about the commercial mandate where it is applicable and their development or service delivery mandates where that is applicable, firstly. Secondly, they must be financially self-sufficient unless there's a reason for the state to subsidize a particular service that is being offered, in particular to the large number of poor people that we have in this country. Thirdly, all of their business models must be reviewed so that they're relevant to their market in the current situation. It's happened in the case of Eskom, and arising from that is the Eskom roadmap paper. Arising from that is the restructuring of Eskom that is proceeding as well. And that's one example, but it's now going to begin to apply to other entities as well. They might have been doing things in the way they're doing it for the last 10 or 20 years, but that doesn't make it relevant for the next 10 years. Some of their services as SOEs are actually very critical to the economy. So freight services, for example, or port services, and the pricing that is attached to those services makes a big difference in terms of cost of doing business in South Africa and the negative or positive impact that administered prices have. And it's that kind of review that once we begin to stabilize some of those entities, we want those efficiencies to come through their operational practices as well. So in many of those entities, it's not about welfare schemes, because each of the stakeholders, whether they be labor or management or boards or whatever the case is, or the businesses that interact with them or citizens that interact with them, must be quite clear about their roles and responsibilities and deliver on them as well. And a key weakness that we find across many of the entities that we deal with, as you will see in other entities as well outside of our portfolio, is operational efficiency. And that then begins to, together with the corruption factor, result in unmanageable financial burdens on these SOEs. So Mr. Marais, for example, was part of the Eskom inquiry in 2017. I suggest that you read the report of that portfolio committee on Eskom and the kind of damage that was done. That damage is not going to be repaired overnight. It's going to take a long time to undertake those repairs. Yesterday, the PRASA administrator was saying the same thing. I managed to hear him on TV. So these are entities that are not going to improve their operations or their financials in some cases purely because you have a new board or a new CEO or whatever the case is. There's tough work ahead of us in terms of repairing culture, in terms of repairing their core operations and the productivity that you get from these entities and the financial management in these entities and the relationship between revenue and costs. And we can say we're not concerned about whatever the technicalities, but at the end of the day, you deal with money as COPA, and government has to deal with money as well. So where there is the possibility of a self-sustainability, then that must be the demand that is placed on the board and management to actually deliver. The private sector is not necessarily the panacea for everything, nor is the state the panacea for everything. I think we need to get the right kind of combination. And the government policy, ultimately, and I think one of the members asked the question, Honorable Shabalala, what strategic equity partner is going to be chosen? Well, nobody is going to offer you anything for SAA right now. Some of you talked about selling SAA. You can sell it for one run. You probably have to pay people to buy, to take SAA. As it stands right now. That's the honest truth. So what we want to undertake the restructuring process under Business Rescue so that it's a viable proposition for a SEP to come in on some basis. It won't come in on a loss-making business. Will you invest your money in a loss-making business? You won't. No. That's a different point, and we'll deal with that at a separate point, Chair. Honorable Kwankwa, I think, makes an important point about 65-2, but I let you apply your minds to that. But as far as I'm concerned, the one thing we need to set the record straight on, there's no deliberate effort not to comply with the submission of accounts. The impediment was the consequences of developing those accounts on the entity concerned. And we'll take the chair's guidance on this and get back to you on that. I think it's important that we do ask the SAA staff to make management accounts available, as the Honorable Nkwanko said, because that will be some financial information that you can actually work with. So we'll talk to the business rescue practitioners about that and get their consent on it as well. On the question of routes and so on, that's all in the mix at the moment. We can have different views about which route to cut and which route to keep. And at the moment, most routes will be unprofitable. Why? Because two factors. One is you're paying a leasing cost on these aircraft, most of them. And the second is that you're carrying a huge head office overhead cost as well. And some of that analysis will emerge soon in terms of actual numbers. And unless we correct those imbalances, we're not going to come up with the right answers. But those are all the bits of work that is going on at present, Chair, as part of developing the business rescue plan. Similarly, in the interactions with labor, Section 189, in fact, was implemented by the previous management before business rescue at a management level. It had some progress, but then it was stalled by the business rescue decision of the board. And the business rescue practitioners are having their own interactions with labor to arrive at some understanding about how they actually go forward. The issues raised by Honorable Moptwe, the law does matter because the law is what dictates what we can do and can't do. There is no deliberate attempt to run the company down by us. There are many others who are running the company down, and we should identify them and deal with them quicker than we currently doing, as particularly the enforcement agencies. There was this incident in Durban where a manager of SAA misread or misunderstood a note emerging from the head office or from the practitioners, advised people that they don't have to come back on the 1st of March, but the next day, once his or her understanding was corrected, and I have a statement from that person in the file here, it was corrected and the staff were informed to the contrary, and that it was an error of communication on their part. So that's a separate matter from the court action that two unions undertook recently at the Labour Court, and that was about whether 189 is operating or not, and the court has given its decision on that particular matter as well, Chair. So from our point of view, we would like to pick up on the suggestion raised by Honourable Sonbo and others as well, that we will inform you when, once the business rescue plan is accepted and brief you and other committees on that, and then whatever questions arise at that point in time, we hope we can answer you satisfactorily. The acting DG just needs to finish off on the airline question.
Right, acting DG. Thank you, Chair. The question was with regard to technical services to Airlink and whether SAA is providing those services. Airlink has its own technical services in-house, so they perform their own maintenance. It's not being carried by SAA. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Any other smaller nyana things? And we've tied it, we're tying it down. Right. Honorable Liz, you had a right. Colleagues, we're not asking new questions, ne? Please. So that I can hand over to the chair and then we lay out the way forward. Colleagues? Okay. Honorable Liz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I said earlier that I thought it was important that the business rescue practitioners were here and that some questions needed to be answered by them. And what's happening now is the minister is answering the questions with his team, and I'll get specifically to Khaleb, Honourable Kachalia's question. It's not about the decision to put the company into business rescue, which you've been very thorough in answering that question, how you came to that conclusion or how the board came to that conclusion with, I presume, shareholder representative input. The question is, how did the business rescue practitioners come to the conclusion within the 10-day period that SAA was rescuable? And only they can answer that question, not you, Minister. And they cannot or should not have taken into account much of what the board and the shareholder representative took into account when putting it into business rescue. Their role is to look at, is it savable in terms of trading itself out of this position? Presumably there were commitments given, and I need to hear that from them, about you know what I'm talking about. PCF, thank you. PC, politically correct. And so I really think that question should be answered by business rescue practitioners, as asked by Honourable Kachalia, because it's a key question. And it's also... let me leave it at that, please, Mr. Chairman.
Bamba. Right. Swat is the last one.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I wanted us not to be misunderstood here in a way that we are all aware and alive to the possibilities and realities are currently happening within the SAA. Hence, SCOPA has been patient for 2 years. However, what we are appealing and saying is that we need to gravitate towards putting things back to normal and compliance. We are nowhere near suggesting that we want to see SAA liquidated or massive job losses. That will be met with the hostility it deserves. That's not our intention. Ours is to ensure that we move back to normality and we start complying. We derive our existence as this committee from Rule 245, which dictates that we must receive all financial statements from all executive organs of state, including their bodies. So we're here to assist you moving towards that direction. But liquidation, it is not on our scorecard or in the table at this current juncture. So we want you to understand us from that context. Hence, we are saying we hope and pray that your plan as a business practitioner will include the date and the time frames towards submitting of the financial statement, because if it does not, then we would have failed in our duties.
All right.
And also, Chair, lastly, from the 6th of December, the business practitioner took over. It does not mean you only starting to account once you have tabled your plan. You have assumed all powers and responsibility in terms of Section 49 of the PFMA. When there is no board, whoever is in charge of that entity assume the responsibility of becoming an accounting authority. We would have loved to hear your voice and your view, because I'm sure you have taken certain decisions and given directives from the date you assume office to date. Thank you.
Right, Honorable Mente, colleagues, ngizonqisha manje. Because it's a
consensus,
yeah.
Guys, let's. Before us, please, Chair, I concur with my colleague. There are questions that the minister cannot answer. He will generalize on them. There are directed questions that only administrators, if we were to put it in the terms of governance, can answer. One. There was a turnaround strategy we spoke to by the board. I presume the board is still there, but then it's taking direction and instruction from the administrators. What happened to the turnaround strategy, which included, Minister, the cancellation of those evergreen contracts? The company name is KWE, Kinezu World Express. It's a logistic company. That's situated at the hangar next to technical. It's merely there to manage your own equipment. You buy it. Then when you want a screw from technical, when a technician comes, they invoice for issuing a screw that you bought it yourself. Kinezu World Express. It's KWE. It has a big KWE inside the hangar. They call it a warehousing something something. And I do not understand why we pay. That year we were there, we have paid $267 million to that company.
Okay,
there is a various other companies that were on the turnaround strategy to be cancelled. And by that time, the $2 billion was going to be cut out completely in terms of operations. There was never going to be a shortfall with that turnaround strategy that was presented to us. So did they find it? Can they answer? Did they find the turnaround strategy? And can they give us which contracts are they cancelling? It was inclusive of the matter which was raised, I think, by SWAP, of pilots and their benefits that were outrageous.
Okay. Colleague.
So if we want to give, we are going to give you money and we are going to save SAA. But we can't give money where we don't see a direction. The direction must be very clear, and the financials must be tabled properly. We can't circumvent the law, unfortunately. We can't be a lawless country.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Colleagues, I, you see, my frustration is your frustration with SAA. I share it 100%, but I want us to adopt an approach which is going to assist us arrive at the intended destination. I don't want the temptation of us conducting a hearing, as we will, in a vacuum. We will conduct that hearing because we want the financials of SAA. That's not negotiable. And we, like I said in December, if it means putting boots on the ground in terms of oversight and going to SAA, then we will do so. There is no way we are going to allow the floodgate to open from all other entities using the SAA modus operandi. Because I maintain we do not comply with the purpose of sanitizing facts. If you are not a going concern, you are not a going concern. We grapple with that. Because if the right things been done at SAA, we would not have the situation we are in now. And we must accept the realities as they are within the parameters of the law. So I urge you, colleagues, that we come to a point of suspending this matter, not closing. Because there are a number of questions which remain unanswered, and each response triggers a question, rightly so. Things are not right at SAA. All is not well in the state of SAA. And we've got every reason to be concerned. So can I really plead with you, colleagues, honestly? There's questions that have been asked. Let's finish with those, and then I will, whilst you answer, I will confer with the chair here, and we'll develop a roadmap in terms of how we'll take this matter forward post today. So it doesn't end today. Today we needed to hear how far processes are, and to remind the department, the ministry, and the business rescue practitioners that all their work will happen within the parameters of oversight and accountability. That whatever they do there will ultimately come here. Because any bailout that they want needs a parliamentary process. So we need to collate all the facts so that we can deal with this situation. So I'm going to exercise dictatorial tendencies now, which are foreign to me, particularly in a democratic state, and suppress hands and ask for responses on the issues that have now been raised. No more for the any reaction now to over will be on the issues that have been raised now by Honorable Liz, Mente, and Uhadeb. Then for today, this will be on the IPG, so this thing is a lesson in Zaj. Right, over to you to respond to the issues that have been.
Thank you. So let me first make an appeal that we need a little bit of patience. And I'm glad that you're going to suspend stroke adjourn this meeting so that we can come back to you. I think it will be unfair to place the practitioners in a position where they give fragmented answers. What we want is a holistic plan, as many of you have asked for. You've asked for a clear set of direction about where is SAA going and what's the financial and business case that underpins whatever destination we actually choose, and that's right. Still in the process of being shaped, including whether Route A is going to survive or Route B is going to lose some frequencies or lose C, Route C is going to be cancelled completely. There's still views that need to be exchanged in that regard. So please, I make this appeal that as far as the practitioners are concerned, let's leave them out of this conversation for now, and you'll get all the answers that you need in time. But it needs to be presented in a holistic way so that we understand each other clearly on that particular matter. I take Honorable Hadebe's point and reassurances about liquidation and so on. And the point, very point you make about the PFMA is the point I made in my introductory remarks, that this interaction between the Companies Act, which doesn't specify SOEs in themselves, and perhaps we need a special SOE section now in that area, and the interaction with the PFMA is something that we're grappling with at the moment in terms of accountability. So that was indicated right in my introductory remarks as well. We'll follow up on this entity. We've tracked it down on the internet that Honorable Bente mentioned, and give you an answer as soon as we have the information in respect of what they're doing. And she's absolutely right. There are a number of contracts that need to be looked into, and we are also anxious that they be looked into sooner rather than later, because those are cost-saving mechanisms that would imply that less money is going to be required in order to go forward. And that's clearly an intention that all of us share, Chair. So let me round up by saying thank you very much for this interaction and this opportunity, and we'll certainly get back to you as soon as we are able to.
Colleagues, I'm going to suggest as follows. Minister, we maintain that we still need to hear from the business risk practitioners from our side. And we understand that we bamba and just wait a little bit. Managing very difficult KZN tensions la. On both sides of the colleagues, we must hear from the business rescue practitioners. The work should be concluded by the 6th of March. That's so from December 6th, it's to the 6th of March. We will set a date. We post that where the business rescue practitioners, as the accounting authority, to appear to a fully fledged hearing so that all these issues that have been raised and should have been responded to are responded to, because we cannot venture moving forward into any new arrangement with SAA having not heard from the people responsible for what I call the transitional period, the business rescue practitioners. Because all roadmaps will arise out of that particular point. So I really think, Minister, that whilst we have heard from you today, and the DG and the DDG, the people we should be speaking to are the business rescue practitioners. So I'm glad they are here, and Mr. Matheson joined the meeting, so the full complement is present. So I think it must be clear today that that interaction will take place. The modalities will be devised, because in our legacy report, there are SAA matters, then there's these new matters which have arisen, and then there are futuristic matters which have a direct impact on the affairs of SCOPA. In particular, we will not enter SCOPA into the policy matters and the policy decisions. The PC will take care of those things. But so our processes continue so that we know where we are. Because Honorable Mente is raising but one transaction, one contract. There is a lot of things. It would serve well, Lebo knows, or pull out the in the Fifth Parliament. SCOPA went to SAA. There's a report. So pull that out, because it tells you the perspective from which we are coming from, that this intervention is not in a vacuum. It is part of a series of interactions and prevailing realities which are problematic for us. So, Chair, if I can hand over to you, and then we will... All right. So, colleagues, I just want to SCOPA, we will meet colleagues and map out our way forward insofar as this matter is concerned. There is correspondence that I've also received from other stakeholders. That information will be circulated to you by this week for the purposes of information. So in other words, the matters have not ended, and therefore SAA must leave here understanding that they remain at the center of parliamentary focus, and we were still going to interact. We appreciate the explanations that have been given insofar as the realities of what they are doing is concerned, and most definitely, Honorable Liz, your questions will be answered so that we finalize on all these matters. So colleagues, having said that, the meeting stands adjourned.
Can we say that government employees must use SAA, please? You know?
And, I disagree.
All right. Yeah. Meeting stands adjourned.